How many of you have ever been lost in a movie theater? You're a smart crowd. That was a trick question. Because the only right answer to that question is, never have I ever been lost in a movie theater. I mean, come on, people, right? Movie theaters are easy to navigate, right? Everybody walks through the same main entrance, right? You get your popcorn and your candy. You go through that area where the guy checks your ticket and then tells you to go to movie theater number 2 or 3. And so long as you recognize numbers on signs, you're probably pretty good, right? Everybody with me? Movie theaters, they're pretty easy to navigate, pretty easy to kind of get around in. If you've been lost, then you probably need, there's probably some life lessons that you need to learn before you start kind of venturing into more difficult areas. Like, on the other hand, a place like the mall. Have you ever been sort of lost or turned around in a mall before? No, not that either? Just me? All right, thank you. I got one able volunteer. Malls are completely different, right? I hate malls. I've always hated malls. But malls are, first of all, they're a huge building in the middle of a really, really big parking lot. So if you're like I am, who's all about efficiency, whatever the store is that you need to go to in the mall, you park in the parking lot exactly the opposite, as far away from that store as you can possibly get, right? That's just the way it turns out. And then you pick one of the entrances to go through, and then you kind of make your way through the mall. I think, personally, through my experience, that navigating life is far more like walking through the mall than it is a movie theater, right? Life is not this linear thing where we all start in the same place with the same privileges and the same opportunities with the same experiences, right? We don't all walk through the same main entrance and then, you know, ultimately are given the destination that we're supposed to go to. It's not quite that simple. It's more like the mall. Now, the mall is a place where there are multiple points of entry, right? There's probably in a large mall 10, 15, 20 different places that you can actually get into the mall through. You've got entrances through the department stores, and each of the department stores have multiple entrances that bring you into different areas of their stores. Then you have other entrances. Then you have my favorite entrance, the food court entrance, right? Sometimes hard to find, but the food court entrance, you know, that's the one where you can grab your Orange Julius, you know, before you start doing your mall-like exercises. So lots of different points of entry, and life is far more like that, I think, right? That as we consider the experiences of our lives, they're unique to us, right? Chances are nobody in this room has had the same set of experiences as someone else. Now, your life could look a lot like another person's, but your experiences are your own. What you've gone through, right? What you've learned, the lessons that have kind of come along the way for you, the way you've been treated, the way you were raised, the education that you pursued, the job that maybe you kind of longed for, right? Those experiences are all very, very unique to each of us as individuals. We all have these different points of entry from which we come. Not only that, but life is further complicated by the fact that there are multiple destinations. Again, this is not so easy that I can write a book that says, here's where everybody starts, here's where everybody wants to be, and so all you have to do is follow these 2-3 easy steps and you will get from point A to point B. No, we start out in various places, but then we also have different destinations that we're ultimately trying to get to. Right? If we had the opportunity for everybody to kind of share in this room, you know, where is it that they want life to take them? Again, there might be some congruity between and among us, each of us, but chances are we'd have different kinds of hopes and dreams, different kinds of aspirations, different kinds of thoughts about what could be. And so that creates a very intricate means by which we have to navigate our lives, that it's not so easy as simply walking from here to there. Now, when you're at the mall and you're not really sure where to go, right? Like you have an idea of the store that you want to go to, or even maybe the kind of store that you want to go to, but you don't know exactly where that store is. What do? You go out into where they have the wayfinding signage, right? They have the big map. You look for the big map. Now, what's the most important thing on that map? The you are here part, right? That is the most important thing, because you have to know where you are before you can start thinking about the direction you need to go to get to where you want to be, right? Second most important thing is probably the destination, but you have to know where you are. Where am I starting? Where am I beginning this journey from here to Macy's? Macy's is still in business, right? Filene's is the one that they're long gone, right? All of them are terrible, but whatever. Here I am, right here, right now. This is where I want to be. This helps me to know if I'm supposed to turn right or left, right? The mall is complicated. The mall has, or most malls have, at least one kind of thoroughfare, right? This one big hall. But then there are spurs, right? Like little spur hallways off that main hall. Some malls have multiple levels, and so there's escalators and elevators and stairwells. And there's a lot of different ways in which you can approach the mall. There's the sketchy bathrooms that we all have to visit occasionally, right, from time to time. And so today's question is, where are you? Where are you? Where are you biographically? If this is your first time to Curtis Lake, first time in a long time, we began 2 weeks ago a new series called Dream Big. And hopefully together we're reading through this book written by Bob Goff called Dream Big. We're real creative around here when it comes to series titles. We thought we'd keep it simple. So hopefully you're reading through that book, and today is kind of the last of the preliminary messages that take us through part one of this series, which is really sort of getting us prepared for how to begin really pursuing the dreams, the desires of our lives, right? So week number one, we looked at the question, what do you want? What do you want? What do you really want? That's a really important question for us to answer. If we're ever going to be able to pursue our dreams, we've got to kind of think about, well, what are those dreams? We've got to start laying out and thinking about, what is it that I want for my life? Maybe it's some particular thing you want to accomplish. And so this accomplishment is the pursuit of your dream. Or maybe you want to be in a certain place, right? And so kind of navigating your way from here to there, that's what your heart wants. Maybe there are a variety of things, like this little kind of short list of, boy, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. That's great. So we're looking at identifying, what do I want? Last week we talked about, well, who are you? Who are you? Right? And of course, what comes out of that is the reality and the awakening, hopefully, that we're all different. We all have, again, different experiences, right? Different things that sort of compose our makeup, our personality, and probably inform what we really want from life. And today, I want to look at this question, where are you? Where are you? Because again, I think we could go through this entire room and find that people are in very, very different places in their lives. And we have to identify where we are biographically. Where has my story brought me to this point? Where am I on this journey called life? Right? Because from there, I can begin thinking about and working toward the strategies that will bring me to where I want to be. If you have your Bibles, please turn to the book of Judges, chapter 6. Judges, chapter 6. Judges is one of the books in the Old Testament that sort of lies between Israel and having entered into the promised land and the period before they started being ruled by a monarchy. So before Saul, who became the first king of Israel, and David, who followed him, and Solomon, who followed him, and on it goes. Before there was ever a king in Israel, God was supposed to be their king, their ruler. And there's this period called the period of the judges, where there's like these little mini kings that God raises up one at a time. We're going to find the story begins, like many of the stories in the book of Judges, Judges chapter 6, verse 1, where it says, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight, right? So this is the beginning of a cycle in which the Israelites related to God. They did evil in the Lord's sight. As you read through the book of Judges, you'll find each of their stories starting out this way, that they went astray from being the people that God had called them to be. God had called them to come out and be separate from the rest of the nations around them, but instead, they had this tendency to revert back to practicing idolatry and practicing the religions of the neighboring countries around them. They didn't want to be unlike other countries, right? Their human nature led them to want and to desire to be like their neighbors. They wanted to do things the way they were doing them. They didn't want to stick out. They didn't want to follow and observe the very peculiar laws that kind of identified them as they were, the people of God. And so they had this tendency to sort of revert back to walking away from and abandoning God. The Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight. So the Lord handed them over to the Midianites for 7 years. Again, this is kind of like part two of this recurring pattern that we see in the book of Judges. Israel walks away from the Lord, and the Lord ultimately just kind of throws his hands up and says, okay, well, if that's what you want, well, that's, then you can have at it. And he lets them be. And it's as if God's protection and provision is sort of removed from the experience of his people. And now suddenly they find themselves subjugated by, hurt by, and real enemies of the nations around them. God handed them over to the Midianites for 7 years. Here's who the Midianites were. Here's what they did. Judges 6:2 says, the Midianites were so cruel that the Israelites made hiding places for themselves in the mountains, caves, and strongholds. Again, remember, the Israelites are living in the promised land, right? Who years before, the spies went in, they found that the grapes were huge, that there was plenty to eat, that the land was rich. It just flowed with milk and honey. Everything you could possibly want could be found in the promised land. That was their inheritance. But now they find themselves running to the mountains, the caves, and old forts and strongholds that once were used to fend off the enemy. They were actually in this mode of just trying to simply preserve their life and anything that they could keep their hands on. It goes on to say, whenever the Israelites planted their crops, marauders from Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east would attack Israel. They'd come and they'd camp in the land and they'd destroy crops as far away as Gaza, right? So throughout the land of Israel, the neighboring nations, they'd find the Israelites planting crops, trying once again to take care of their needs. And what would they do? They'd rush in and take advantage and overpower the Israelites and fortify themselves and meet the needs of their people and of their herds with the labor of the Israelites. And what that did was it left the Israelites with nothing to eat. They took all the sheep, the goats, the cattle, and donkeys. These enemy hordes coming with their livestock and tents were as thick as locusts, and they arrived on droves of camels, too numerous to count, and they stayed there until the land was stripped bare. Disney made a movie about this called A Bug's Life. Everything I'm talking about today can be found in the story A Bug's Life, okay? That is the story of the people of Israel during the time of Gideon. Check it out. All right, so the enemy hordes, they come, they just lay waste to all the land of Israel, and it leaves Israel, Judges 6:6, reduced to starvation by the Midianites. And then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. And there's kind of like phase number three in this recurring cycle in the experience of the Israelites. They abandon God, God gives them up over to judgment, and then they begin crying out to the Lord for help. When it says here that Israel was reduced to starvation, it literally means Israel became small. You could actually picture, probably through the famine and starvation that was their experience over the last 7 years, that physically speaking, they were actually shriveling up into nothing. They were becoming small in stature, small in body, but small as a people as well. So insignificant became they in the midst of all that was going on. They were powerless to do anything to improve their situation. There was no way that they were ultimately going to be able to deliver themselves from the strength and the might of these nations that had come around them. Well, then, as God was prone to do, God commissioned a person to come and rescue the nation of Israel from their difficulty. This man's name was Gideon. The Bible tells us Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press to hide the grain from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." Now, if you've never heard Gideon's story before, you'd probably expect that Gideon was one of the choice men of valor in the nation of Israel, one of the few left standing that would ultimately be able to lead God's people out of the hand of the Midianites and the other surrounding nations. If you had not heard Gideon's story before, you would expect that as you surveyed the land, there was nobody more fit Nobody more able to do the work that the Israelites needed God to do. But most of you probably have heard Gideon's story, and you know he wasn't like that at all. In fact, even in just this little kind of description of where Gideon is, he's threshing the wheat in a wine press. Normally, you'd thresh wheat out more in the open. But he didn't want to do that because he knew that he would be observed by those enemy nations. And if they saw that he was dealing with and preparing something for food, they'd come and they'd take it away from him, perhaps even kill him in the process. And so he's in the wine press. That is this like this excavated area out of the earth, probably below ground level, hiding this little sort of futile effort to feed himself and his family, right? He's even keeping that away from the enemy because that's the only chance that he has. So where was Gideon? Well, Gideon wasn't out in the open. Gideon wasn't out rallying the troops. Gideon wasn't out shouting to the Israelites, "Hey guys, we can take these people. We're not putting up with this anymore." No, Gideon was, he was hiding for his life. He was in the most pathetic means possible, trying to provide a simple little bit of food for his family. This angel of the Lord suddenly appears to him and says, "Gideon, you great and noble and mighty hero, the Lord is with you." Where was Gideon? Well, Gideon was in a place where his present circumstances and this declaration, "God is with you," didn't match up. Right? Again, like imagine the scene. The angel of the Lord comes to Gideon and says, "The Lord is with you." Perhaps somebody has told you that before. Perhaps as you've been walking through and journeying through life, right, and sharing a little bit of your experiences, a person has declared to you. Perhaps you've heard it in church before. Perhaps you've even sang it in a song that God is with you. Didn't we all just do that just a few moments ago? Don't we do that Sunday after Sunday after Sunday? We sing these songs relating to us this truth that God is with us, that God is present, that God is in the midst of our circumstances, that God is there ready to help us with whatever we could possibly need. Sometimes we sing the words to those songs. Sometimes we let the words from a speaker like I to just sort of kind of come and go in one ear and out the other without much thought for what they actually mean, because we're far more ruled by the condition of our present circumstances than by such oracles of truth as that. Again, I could tell you till I'm blue in the face that God is with you. The degree to which you believe that is probably going to be determined by, what are you going home to today? When you get back in the car, is it going to feel like God is with you? When you walk back into your home, is it going to feel like God is with you? When you go to your workplace tomorrow, is it going to feel like God is with you? Well, think about where Gideon is. Gideon is not in a place where he is ready to believe and hold on to and run around shouting himself, "God is with us," because his experience didn't match up with the truth coming from the mouth of this stranger. Gideon responds, "Sir, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us?" An innumerable amount of books have been written trying to answer this question. I mean, for thousands of years, philosophers have wondered. Theologians have tried to explain. Ordinary people have grappled with this question. If the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? Maybe you're here today and that's exactly the kind of question you would love to have answered very, very well for your life, given the present circumstances that define your life today. Maybe you're sitting here wondering, well, preacher, if the Lord truly is with me, then why is all this, whatever this is, why is this happening to me? A great question that Gideon asks. I wish I had a great answer for you. Right? I mean, we know, right? We read the story and we understand that the circumstances that the Israelites found themselves in were in due large part to the fact that they had walked away from an abandoned God. We don't necessarily know that about Gideon himself. I mean, we do find him as God is calling him out later on. He has to go and tear down the altars, right? And tear down what has been erected to worship other gods, right? Before he can ever pursue the commission that God has for him, he's got to go deal with some junk, deal with some garbage that is a part of his family's story and perhaps even his story himself. But Gideon's circumstances don't at all reinforce the idea that God is with them. As far as Gideon was concerned, the stories were only stories. That's all they were. The stories of what had been told of the past and how God intervened on behalf of his people and how God saved his people from time to time and the mighty works that God did within the lives of his people, those were stories. Where was Gideon? Gideon was in a place where the stories were only stories. Gideon asks, and where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Where are they? Didn't they say the Lord brought us up out of Egypt, but now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites? Now, Gideon grew up in Sunday school, right? His Sunday school teacher had the flannel graph, right? And they put up the flannel piece of Moses, right? And the burning bush. And he'd start telling the story about how God called Moses to go and rescue the nation of Israel out of Egypt, right? He heard the stories about how Israel came up out of that land and then were suddenly confronted by the Red Sea. But then God did this amazing miracle where he caused the sea to recede and the Israelites walked across this massive body of water on dry ground. And then the enemy that was pursuing them were caught up in the sea and they were freed and liberated. Gideon grew up with the stories of how God miraculously fed the Israelites with this weird bready stuff called manna and quail that came out of nowhere for many, many years. How they walked about and marched about the wilderness and their shoes never wore out and they were always provided for. When they were thirsty, God made water come out of a rock, right? These were all the stories that Gideon grew up having learned but never had experienced himself. No, his experiences were far, far from different from those stories. And I'll bet that for each of us in this room today, when we consider some of the grandeur of the stories that we read in the Bible, whether they're the stories of the Old Testament or the stories of what Jesus did in the New Testament, what the apostles did after Jesus in the New Testament, right? We read all these accounts of these miraculous things happening, these supernatural interventions on the part of God toward his people. We scratch our head and we wonder, man, why does the experience, the practical, real, everyday, physical, tangible experience of my life seem to mesh with the stories? And so maybe you're here today and the stories of the Bible, they're just stories. Gideon had never, to this point, seen a miracle. Now, a little spoiler alert, Gideon, he's going to see some miracles. Like, what God does through Gideon and this lame little army that he assembles together to go and defeat thousands and thousands and thousands of enemies, I mean, is nothing short of miraculous, right? God, he actually says to Gideon in one place, hey, listen, your army's way too big. You got 32,000 people here ready to go into battle. That's too many, right? Tell everybody who's scared to go home. And so 10,000 people, gone, right? But then God says to Gideon, your army's still way too big. Listen, if I let you go out into battle and you guys win the war here, you're going to think it was because of you. You're going to think it happened because you did it. And so here's what we're going to do. I want you to take everybody by the stream, and I'm going to tell you who's going to ultimately go with you. And then what ultimately happens are just 300 lame, insignificant, pathetic, group of men go with Gideon into battle, and God delivers the nation of Israel on account of these 300 men. God was going to do a miracle in Gideon's life, but to this point, Gideon never experienced the miraculous. Again, the stories were just stories. And so today I ask you, what about you? Where are you? As you think about, you know, your journey of faith and life as it has brought you to this place in your life right now, where are you? Where are you when such things are talked about, when somebody begins speaking of the great things that God has done and is doing in their lives? Do you just scratch your head and say, boy, that just doesn't seem to mesh with my experience? Are you like Gideon, kind of hiding in the wine press, you know, trying to put a couple handfuls of flour together to make a loaf of bread to eat? Like, does it feel like that? Are you in scarcity or in abundance? Both of those places have their challenges, right? Scarcity has its challenge, of course, because it's like we spend so much of our lives just trying to survive, right? And so if you're living in scarcity, in real actual scarcity, you're trying to make it through today, and then tomorrow you're going to try to make it through tomorrow. That's rife with challenges, right? It doesn't feel like you ever have the energy or the resources to actually pursue what your heart really wants. And so if that's where you are, then that is where you are. Maybe you're in this place of abundance, right? You're not, there's enough money to take care of all the responsibilities you have and plenty left over to do some of the fun things that you want to do in life. You're not worried about, you know, various things that, you know, other people who are kind of living in scarcity are worried about. Your relationships are good, things are solid. But believe me, living in the state of abundance, that can be challenging too, because it often leaves us in a place where we're tempted to just sort of forget about God. Like, you know, whenever we enter into this phase of life where we don't really need God and we don't need God working in our lives because things are sort of on autopilot and taking care of themselves, we're human beings. We have this tendency sometimes to just forget we even need God. And so that comes with its challenges. Are you in this place of abundance? If that's where you are, then that's where you are. Think about your job. You currently, like, are you in your dream job? Like, man, I nailed it. This is where I want to be. This is probably where I want to be for the rest of my life. Are you working in a place that's just sucking the life out of you? Well, that's where you are. Are you hurtling down the hill completely out of control? Like, your world is defined by the chaos that you are currently operating in, and you're just tumbling down the hill. Oh yeah, things are moving all right. Things are moving. Things are moving too fast and furious, and I can't get my feet underneath me, and I can't make things slow down fast enough to even really start thinking about what my heart really wants, what I would really love to see come true in terms of my dreams. I'm just hurtling down this hill. Or are you in completely the opposite place where you're just stuck? Where you're stuck and you're not sure how to, like, even take kind of the next step to sort of get things going, to get that motor cranking. If that's where you are, then that's where you are. It's okay to be where you are and to wish that you were somewhere else. One of the things that we have to just come to grips with is the idea that I don't have to pretend that I'm in a place that's different from where I actually am. Where you are is where you are. And it's okay today, it's okay that you're there wishing that you were somewhere else. The Apostle Paul had this fascinating ability to live kind of in the in-between of pursuing with all of his heart the ambitions of his life, but also to live with contentment in what it is that he was currently experiencing. That is a really, that's an amazingly challenging place to sort of live between. It's okay to be where you are and to wish you were somewhere else. That's what we're working through. Right? Again, we're trying to determine, where am I on the map? I'm looking at the map, considering all the various places that I might want to go, all the various directions that I might want to choose. I got to know where I am. I've got to own up to it. I've got to be willing to be honest about it. And then I can begin to move from there. So if having figured out, at least to some extent, where I am, and knowing that this is not where I want to be, well, what am I going to need? What am I going to need to help get me from here to there? The first thing you're going to need is a starting line. I don't have to say much about this because we've been talking about it this whole time. You need the starting line. Again, you have to have some context that you've been open and honest about with yourself and perhaps even some other people in your life so that you can understand the starting line from where you begin. You say, well, you know, I'd really like to finish my degree. Okay, well, what's your starting line? Have you started already? If you have, then now you got to figure out the strategy for completing the coursework that you need to finish that degree. Or maybe you never started. You got to figure out, all right, well, this is where I'm going to go and start taking some classes so I can pursue a degree because I need the degree to do the job that I want to do. You know, you need a starting line. Second, you need this really, really important thing called wisdom. You got to have wisdom. You got to want wisdom, right? I mean, the book of Proverbs is dedicated to the theme of like trying to grow in us wisdom. Wisdom is not the right answer to every question. Wisdom is not like I'm the smartest person in the room or that I have a high degree of intellectual ability and I can answer and solve all kinds of equations. No, it's not. Wisdom, as defined by the Hebrews, is skill in living. Chances are you have some skills, I hope. I hope each of you have a skill anyway, or some skills, right? You probably leverage those skills to provide for yourself, skills that you've kind of developed or learned along the way that allow you to do the job maybe that you're doing or allow you to excel at some particular hobby or thing that you just kind of love to do, right? And so we leverage our skills to enrich our lives. One of the skills we really, really need if we're going to move from where we are to where we want to be is skill in living. It's actual, like, an actual utility. I'm going to put on my belt of life here. It's going to help me navigate the difficult circumstances that I face in life. You need wisdom. Well, how do you get wisdom? You get wisdom by coming here and listening to me, for one thing. You get wisdom through your growing understanding of what the Word of God tells us about us and about the world we live in. Right? That gives you wisdom. You get wisdom by surrounding yourself with people who are wise, right? People who they themselves have skill in navigating the difficult circumstances in life. Maybe you could grow in your own wisdom because you just spend a little time with somebody who's wise. We get wisdom, thirdly, by asking for it. There's a promise in the Bible that says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who dumps it out, gives it liberally, who will shower you with wisdom. That doesn't mean he's going to make the decisions for you that wisdom tells you to make. That's a whole different part of what do you do with the wisdom? Well, you can choose to do the wise thing or the unwise thing, but wisdom is available to us. Third, we need guidance. We need guidance. We didn't go through all of Gideon's story. You're certainly welcome to read it later on and kind of find out how did God ultimately use him and orchestrate events in his life to accomplish what Gideon really wanted. Guidance was a really, really big part. Guidance was everything. God helped illuminate the steps that Gideon had to take to get from where he was to where he wanted to be. And guidance is available to you and me as well. And we're going to need it if we're going to get from here to there. The map at the mall serves as a guide, right? Helps me to know where I am. Helps me to know which direction I need to go in to get to where I want to be. Jesus has promised guidance through his Spirit, Right? He said to his disciples, I will send you the Holy Spirit. He will guide you into all truth. He will be your teacher. The reality is that you and I, we probably don't leverage the guidance available to us through God's Spirit like we ought to. I'm just saying, there's a really, really good chance that most of us don't leverage God's Spirit and the guidance and the direction that He wants to give us like we ought to. But He's there. He's available. It's going to require, I'm not going to like this, it's going to require some time, right? Because in order to receive that guidance, you have to pray. You have to shut your mouth a little bit. Listen to what God speaks to you. You have to open up yourself to ways in which God wants to kind of move the direction of your heart, what He wants to expose, what He wants to bring to light in your life. But you're going to need guidance. It's there. And then finally, you're going to need courage. You're going to need courage. The only way you're going to get from here to there is probably through a step of courage. Ultimately, Gideon had to walk away from the wine press. He had to come out of hiding. He had to embrace the truth that was declared to him, that God was going to use him, that God was calling him to do something, and he had to go and do it. Over the next few weeks, as we're looking through this book together, we'll be working through the strategies, the actual kind of nuts and bolts of, well, how do I begin pursuing the desires of my heart? How do I start making the big dreams maybe that I have a reality in my life? Well, somewhere along the way, some courageous step is going to need to be taken. And I believe God can give you that courage. I'm going to invite you to stand. The band's going to lead us in this song to kind of close us out today. A song that just reinforces the idea that God is the God of the impossible. And what circumstances you might be facing, how the where of your life has been currently defined, I want for you to feel differently as you leave this place today about the reality of what God can and will do in your life than how you felt about that before. Let's sing this.